Welcome back to the Flex Diet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike T. Nelson. On this podcast, we talk about all things to increase muscle performance, improve body composition, do all of it in a flexible framework without destroying your health. Today, we've got my buddy, Dan Hunter, and we're talking all about corporate athletes, how to maintain and strive for peak physical and mental performance. So even if you're not a corporate athlete or executive, I think a lot of the concepts that we talk about here will cross over. So we're talking about the practical experiences, what are some challenges in training these types of athletes, the role of habit formation. I'm even getting into things such as ketones and cognition, building trust, the role of supplements, and a bunch of other stuff. So I think you will enjoy this podcast. And our sponsors today, if you're looking for electrolytes, we've got our friends over at Element. I'm drinking the grapefruit one today, which I really enjoy. That's probably one of my favorites. Raspberry is my other favorite also, so check them out. We will have more from Tecton Ketones coming up very soon. A new product should be out, again, very, very soon. As soon as I have an announcement, I will share all of that here, but pretty excited about that. And then for training equipment, check out my friends over at Beyond Power with the Voltra 1. That's a really cool device that replaces a cable machine and allows you to train with differences in concentric and eccentric. So you can do rows with 100 pounds of concentric and then have it pull back with, say, 130 or even 150 pounds. And what I really like about it is you can change the strength curves on it. Super easy to use, and you don't necessarily need an app for it. You can just change everything directly on the screen. There's no monthly fee, which is nice. My pet peeve with a lot of, especially equipment, when you feel like you paid for the equipment, is now you have to pay another fee forever in order to use the thing you spent a lot of money on. That is definitely not the case here. So I've really enjoyed it. I've used it a lot. I've had a couple people pick it up so far, and they've really loved it. So check them out. It is an affiliate link below. Any questions on any of those, hit me up. As always, if you want more from me, make sure to check out the daily newsletter. I go to the link below. I'll send you a free gift and put you on the newsletter with all sorts of great free, usable, and hopefully entertainment at the same time for information. So enjoy this podcast here. My buddy, Dan Hunter. And welcome to the podcast, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Nice to see you again. Somewhat in person. I think the last time I saw you was in person. Was it Texas? Is that right, I think?
Yeah, indeed. It was in Dallas for the Transformation Genesis.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what year that was. Is that
2019.
Because it was, I always have this thing now where it's before COVID or after COVID. It was right before COVID.
That's right. Yeah. It was 2019 in Dallas.
Yeah. That was fun. That was a good time.
It was. It was nice to get together a lot of coaches who were passionate about getting results in the field. And so that was the idea there, is just to bring together trainers, coaches who, from an education perspective, are still coaching, like proper coaching in the trenches day to day. And you get a lot of educators out there now who they spend all their time educating and not so much coaching. And I feel that that's possibly a weakness to the education system, because we're constantly learning and evolving and implementing. And I think that whilst there's place for what used to work, there's place for a science, but there's place right now also for what is working through experience in the field. So that's what I wanted to do there with the Transformation Genesis. And I'd love to be able to do it again, but it slowed down a lot of these in-person courses, seminars, post-COVID. But I'd love to be able to get something like that going again, because I know that there's genuine interest for, first of all, for knowledge, but also I think for to be part of a tribe, to be part of something. And I remember how, again, I sound like an old person, but pre-COVID... the world of strength and conditioning was a small, tight-knit group, and now post-COVID it's expanded dramatically, which is great. But it seems like the new guys on the block are much more interested in what they can learn online or for free or from influencers and stuff like that. And it would just be so great to reach out to these guys who I know, I'm sure we could get interested in the real stuff, but they just need to know it's out there, I think.
Yeah, I think like I always am big on applied knowledge. Like I still have clients online. I've capped it to 17 just for my own sanity. But I've had feedback from many marketers and maybe I don't know, I see their point of at what point have you been doing it long enough that you have enough accumulated info, et cetera, et cetera. But like you said, I'm still in the area of I just get more difficult cases that I have to problem solve of problems I wouldn't seek out myself to solve to get other knowledge. You know what I mean? Because that person's paying me a lot of money and something comes up and you're like, oh crap, like how do I figure this out? I'm going to try to do whatever I can to figure it out. Where if I'm left on my own, it's like, hey, this is a cool study. It's a hard read. Do I really need to learn about X, Y, or Z right now? I don't know.
No, that's right. And I think that it's hard to have, I believe anyway, it's hard to have that mentality in a sector or an industry where there's constantly evolution, where we're learning more and more still.
Yes.
So if you can't then go and take that and go and apply it with your client base and see whether what the papers are saying, you're actually translating it
Does it
into.
actually even work too?
That's right. That's right. Because no matter how good a study is, and don't, I love going through studies, no matter how good a study is, sometimes there are certain variables which we just haven't taken into account. And it's always good practice to then go and take something and before going spouting off over the internet or on courses is okay, has this worked when I've put it into practice?
Yeah, and that's my other little pet peeve of you see people even more so on the research side who are very well educated but tend to I don't know if it's because of popular media or because things become popular will skew more towards the side of their knowledge and which I'm fine with them giving out their opinion and even potentially guessing of what the future may bring or talking about current research, but I get a little unnerved when they start translating that into specific coaching advice. And I know they've never coached a single person in their entire life. And then you see some of the crazy stuff they come up with, who anyone who's coached people for even a couple of years would look at it and go, that may be true in research. That may be an accurate interpretation of that study, but that is a horrible advice for anyone to do in practice.
Some of it's just not even practical to
It's
put
not
into
practical,
practice,
no,
right?
but they don't know that. And they're like, this is what you would need to do. And I'm like, maybe 0.5% of the population?
Yeah, totally. I think that's the other part, which I always say is your recommendations are only as good as the amount that they're going to be able to actually do. And
Yep.
that's definitely the case with the kind of population that I work with, which corporate clients is there's so many other variables which are going to affect how much they can put into practice. And so it's about finding the most effective dose and the most effective way of communicating what you want them to put into place.
Yeah, and you work with a lot of corporate athletes. Like, why did you call them athletes? Which I would agree with that term. But one of the things I stole from Dr. Arakab at Z Health years ago is that an athlete is anyone who uses their body to make a living, which you could argue is almost everyone. They're just different degrees and each have their own unique sets of constraints and problems you're trying to solve.
Yeah, that's right. I call them corporate athletes because oftentimes the demands on a corporate client are very similar to a certain extent to an athlete in the sense that they need to perform at the highest level. They need to be able to recover well, to perform well. They need to be able to make good decisions under stress, split decisions under stress. They need to be able to handle chronic levels of stress throughout a working season. So anything which is related to performance, we're looking more on a cognitive side, but it's still performance to me. But then there's all the other aspects around it, which are nutritional or lifestyle, which are going to augment and improve their performance when they're not expected to perform, if that makes sense. So then we're
Yeah.
talking about sleep regulation, we're talking about energy regulation, we're talking about mood, we're talking about all of these types of things.
And then I'd say also on top of a lot of constraints of maybe some of them have more income to spend, but then they're limited on time or vice versa.
I would say that yes, there's definitely income to spend, but I would say they're more, again, based on the limited experience that I have with pro athletes. I've worked with a couple of pro soccer or football teams. I've worked with individuals and stuff like that, but I wouldn't say that that my main business comes from pro athletes. But I would say that from the exposure that I've had to them, what's great with corporate athletes is they're willing participants always.
Oh,
And
yeah.
so they're coming to you asking for your advice because they genuinely want your expertise to get better. And that's not always the case when working with pro athletes, especially
No.
they are begrudgingly coming to you a lot of the time. Especially like I said, my main exposure has been with soccer players and football players, and having them understand that it's not okay to be playing PlayStation till 2 or 3 in the morning, or training on an empty stomach because they just don't feel like it, or because they want, I'm not sure if you call it the same in the US, but like Nutella, like chocolate spread on top and
Yeah.
stuff like that. And for them, it's as long as I've got talent, man. And then they've got people around them and whispering all things in their ears. So I find them to be much less willing participants than the corporate worlds. And so there's a bigger pool to fish in.
Yeah, and even with, I think people would be shocked at how many high-level athletes don't really like training that much and almost do it more as a job. Obviously, there's a plenty of exceptions to that. There's people who are super passionate about it. They love it. They'll do whatever. Those people 100% exist for sure. But I think, and this was my perception years ago before even working with any higher level athletes, was, oh man, these people are professionals. This is all they do. They've got to just, every single one of them's got to love their sport and love everything about it. They'll do whatever I tell them to do. And no, that's not true.
No, because the ones that do oftentimes become the exception. You talk,
Yes.
if I talk about, and even though they don't do it the best. So let's take, for example, and again, I'll talk about the sports that I know, but Cristiano Ronaldo, right? Cristiano Ronaldo is known to be someone who really takes care of his body,
Yep.
who does all of the recovery stuff, all over the extra training, pays attention to his nutrition. Is what he does when he does that the smartest and most efficient stuff that he could do? No, I don't think so. When I see some of the stuff that he does, you're like,
Yeah.
but he's doing something,
But
and
he's doing
he's
something.
therefore doing more than most, and so his longevity in the game is higher. And I'm sure that there are examples of that in American football and other sports too, right?
Yeah, I even think of, because I grew up watching Michael Jordan and like just watching his career, he definitely paid a lot more attention to strength and conditioning and recovery and obviously hired a trainer and all these things, even being as good and talented as he was. And that was at a time where it was just starting to be a little bit more accepted. But you do find a lot more athletes towards the end of their career realize, oh man, all of a sudden, if I could take care of myself this off season, I might be able to play one or two more seasons. Not only do I want to play because I realize how much I love the game at this point and I don't want to retire, I also could make a few more tens of millions at the same time. So it's interesting to see trajectories of people who started off just getting by on raw talent and Nutella or Skittles or whatever, and towards the end of their career realize that now they're doing all the things they need to. And shocker, a lot of times it does work. Like they're able to play for a couple more years at the end of their career.
Yeah, and examples of the opposite, right? Is there some where you go, man,
Yep.
if you can see it happening and you're like, I know you got talent, but go train, go train, go train, and they don't. And then they come back after off season overweight, and you go, that's an accident waiting to happen. And then a season later, they're just continuously injured, and their career is cut short because of it. And it's such a shame. But then of course, I'll digress. There's
Yeah.
also the issue nowadays, which again we're talking like post-COVID, is there's the sexy training compared to the unsexy
Oh
training.
yeah.
You can go to Dubai and you can train on wobble boards and elastic bands and do all this velocity-based training all the time with plyometrics constantly. And man, that is the place to go if you want to be the best. No,
Yeah.
it's not. That's sexier on Instagram. And I think that we're talking to a generation of athletes where that sometimes I it's countless the amount of coaches that I've spoken to who have said to me, man, like we were doing such great stuff with this athlete and injury free, so many minutes played, these types of things, all the rest. And then all of a sudden, their head got turned by something, by some trainer they saw doing this stuff, and went off. And like I said, there are many factors which influence injury, and it's not always what the strength and conditioning coach does. And I think that sometimes we tend to jump on that bandwagon. But for sure, there are good practices and not so good practices.
Yeah. And once you've been around enough, you can watch film of certain athletes and just see things. And like you said, there's no way you can 100% predict an injury, but you could definitely see patterns. You can definitely see things that are going on. And if you've done it long enough, you can, I'd say, relatively accurately predict that they're going to have an injury coming up sooner than later. What kind of injury may be harder to predict, at what point, who knows? And even within a lot of the high-level organizations, like exactly what you said, there's so many people in cogs in the wheel, from the physio that's working with them directly. Maybe they have a nutritionist, maybe they have someone for mindset, psychology, they've got logistics, they've got their skills person, they've got maybe a team, they travel, they're travel athletes, and now they're moving back and forth between different places, different locations. They've got a manager, they've got someone else they might have hired to do something else. And so now you've got nine cooks in the kitchen, and sometimes it isn't always clear, like, who is the top person doing the systems approach to everything. And a lot of times it's just this coagulation of these experts who no ill intent by any of them, or not that they're not good at their job. But again, you have to figure out how do all those components work together in the best manner too.
Yeah, so much noise. And also then I think that that sometimes leads to the players not always trusting in the beginning, you know, what they're
Oh,
being told.
sure.
They're giving so much advice and they're not sure whether the advice they're getting is coming from a good place or not.
Yep.
Anyway,
Especially when you talk about.
I could talk about this all day, but I'm not sure that
Yeah.
I'm the best person to talk about it because it's not obviously not my expertise either, but I'd
Yeah.
love
But
to
I
talk
think
about it.
it illustrates that there is no perfect scenario. So I think a lot of times people training, whether they're a corporate athlete, they're a Division One athlete, or they're just going to the gym to look better naked. I think
Yeah.
it's always easy to look at someone else and be like, oh, they're a top level athlete. They can have a chef cook for them. They could have all this stuff done. And the thing I've always made is, even like in the US with Oprah Winfrey, who's been a public figure, we've seen her gain weight, lose weight, has money, can hire a coach, could hire a chef, could hire everyone to do everything for her. But at the end of the day, it's still that individual who has to decide, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to eat the food that was made for me. I'm going to go to bed early. Like, even at the highest level where everything in theory could be done for you, it's still the individual who has to decide, like your corporate athletes. Oh man, okay, I'm gonna try to get to bed a half hour earlier tonight. Or I'm gonna choose this option of food over this or not. Or today was a hard day, but I'm still gonna go train because I'll feel better afterwards. It still comes
Yeah.
down to that individual has to decide and make those decisions no matter what the outside circumstances look to be optimal or not.
Totally. And that's actually something that I'm really curious about. I spent a lot of time trying to understand what triggers that click, you know,
Totally.
because you have clients that can be coming to you for months, years, and you're giving them all of the right advice and you're working it a million different ways to try and get them to implement it, but they just haven't made the decision themselves. And then all of a sudden, something out of nowhere just clicks, and they'll do one of the basic things, one of the most simplest things, and all of a sudden everything changes. And I would love to say that there's some type of magical formula to figure out where that click happens. I haven't found it yet,
Me neither.
but I do love trying to figure out. I spent a lot of time also just because I'm a constant student and I'm always trying to study. I spent a lot of time studying NLP as well, you know, to just
Interesting.
try and understand like how can you communicate to someone and communicate with someone and pick up on signals and respond to them in a way which brings them to that click sooner. Because they're always leaving clues, but if you're not listening and you're not, I'm not sure if there's this expression in English or not, but I know that in Belgium they often say you're born with two eyes, two ears, and
Yes,
one
yes.
mouth for a reason. And I'm constantly trying to figure that out. Whenever my client's in, I'm watching, I'm listening, and I'm just trying to pick up on, okay, what's that one thing? What's that one pain point? What's that one that I can respond to, which can help trigger or click sooner for them to make that change? Because it's crazy. Just to give you an example, we have a client that's been with us for years, and had been struggling with weight for a while, and had spent a long time around us, and got all the best advice and all the rest, and just wasn't making any progress. Then out of nowhere, out of their own accord, just decided, right, I'm just going to rock to work every day and back. And it was like, great, we've spoken about extra movement for a long time, and we've spoken about fresh air, and we've spoken about sunlight, and we've spoken about all of these things, right? But then all of a sudden does it, and then gets on a roll, and then just like pop, 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 pop. And 3 months later, down 17 kilos, you're like, well,
Oh,
that's where it
wow. Nice.
was. Yeah. But you can suggest that for as long as you want. It's trying finding that one thing at the right time, which is going to make that click. So yeah, that's something I'm really, really, really curious about more and more.
Yeah, the
Because
two books
obviously
I
the
tell.
goal for I'm sure it's the same case for you, Mike, is really if you're genuinely passionate about what you do, and I know that if we've been in this industry this long, it's the case, is you're passionate about changing people's lives. You're
Oh,
passionate
yeah. There's
about
no other
having an
reason to
impact
stay.
on their lives. It's what gets you out of bed in the morning. And if and so that's why that question keeps me constantly searching.
Yeah, the two parts I have a hard time resolving in my head are the two books I recommend trainers to buy in this area or anyone is Atomic Habits by James Clear, which is CJ Fogg stuff of just do
Yeah.
really, really small habits, habit stacking, and there's a lot of great research on that. I've used that with a ton of clients. Yeah, exactly. And does it work? Yeah, it works really well. Does it work for 100% of the people? I would say no, but I don't think anything works for 100% of the people.
Yeah.
But on the other end of the spectrum is another book by James Fell called The Holy Shit Moment. And it's basically like what you were describing. Why do people change in almost an instant, what appears to be overnight? Like my dad, for many years when I was growing up, smoked cigarettes, smoked probably half a pack, maybe a pack of cigarettes a day, tried to quit many, many, many times. All of a sudden, one day he got really sick and just said, I'm never smoking cigarettes again. Never had another cigarette for the rest of his life. 35 years later, he's never smoked a single cigarette. And I'm
Yeah.
just like, how does that work? Like, how do you have a lot of data showing that small change works, but yet you have these epiphany things where all of a sudden, instantly, and the person has normally done it multiple times before, but this time it appears to be the same, but obviously wasn't the same. And they make a huge change, and that change actually sticks. Like those
Yeah.
two paradoxes just fascinate me.
No, I get it. It seems to be like this accumulation of pressure, which
Right.
all of a sudden that pressure becomes too much and there's a flip.
Yep.
And yeah, totally. But I remember having that same question, that same conversation a good 10 years ago about the relevance of putting these pictures of people with lung cancer on cigarette packs and stuff like that, because whilst the intention is good, there are a lot of people out there who they know all the reasons why they shouldn't smoke. They still
Yeah.
can't stop smoking. And then indeed, I think you said it was your father. My grandfather had the same thing. Is he got sick one night, one day, like dog sick, and then a couple of days later went to go and smoke a cigarette, went, oh no, and put it down, never smoked again. And it's baffling.
Yeah, I get your thoughts on this part, and we'll talk more about corporate athletes too, because I think this is relevant that the only two things I think I've can air quotes figured out in that area is one, I think there has to be some sort of association of a different sensation. So, for example, if you read studies on the use of psychedelics like psilocybin for smoking sensation, and you read like what some of the people actually reported in the study. And this is usually with therapy, but it's usually only like a couple sessions. I can't remember exactly. It was like two or three sessions. More than one person reported that under the influence of the psychedelic, they could feel like they knew what would happen if they continued to smoke. Even though they knew, air quotes, they didn't have any more new data about what it was. But because of the drug, they had the sensation of what it felt like if they either were continue or if they were to stop, which I find fascinating. And then also I think related to that is just the role of your identity. And people even after even psychedelics for an example, have reported that they felt like their identity had shifted. So now they were someone who no longer has to smoke cigarettes or whatever the thing was. But I don't know,
Yeah,
there's got to be, I think, some
that's
connection
an
between a
interesting one.
visceral sensation and an identity.
Yeah, I do remember, and again, it was part of that same conversation, is when you talk about identity, is people who identify themselves as ex-smokers or
Right.
as alcoholics are more likely to relapse than those who don't.
Yes.
And indeed, that's that identity shift totally. And I see that actually, it's funny you should say that. I see that in transformations, so
Yes.
in lifestyle choices and stuff like that, is when people start with us, they're doing it with a short-term, oftentimes a short-term goal in mind, and they're like, I can be disciplined for this amount of time, I can stick to that diet for 3 months or for 6 months or whatever, I can train for 3 months or for 6 months. But it's when you when it's not a and those conversations happen, and they have to happen with the coach. Oftentimes is it's let's reframe this. Like when you're working, at least the way that I explain it, when you're working with me, I'm not interested in you doing the hard stuff for 3 months. I'm interested in you see you already visualizing who you're becoming,
Yes.
and faking it before you make it. Like so in your head, because once it becomes indeed like a part of you, like. For me, someone said to me, training. What if you don't feel like training? And again, with a balanced approach to this, you don't want to just push, you don't want to just be obsessive either. But for me, having grown up in a family that is very active, very sporty, my parents were athletes and all the rest, is the way I compare it is a bit to brushing your teeth. Like for me, training is like brushing my teeth. It's not a question of whether I will or whether I won't. It's part of me,
It's more a
and
question of how or what.
yeah, exactly. And it will happen, because actually it's the same with brushing teeth. So in the beginning, when you're a child, it requires discipline, it requires to be encouraged to do it and all the rest. But you get to a point where when you're older, I'm not sure that I know anyone that will turn around and say to you, I like brushing my teeth, but the feeling they get from not brushing their teeth outweighs the dislike of brushing your teeth. I don't want to walk around with fur on my teeth. I don't want to walk around with smelly breath, with yellow teeth and stuff like that. So I brush my teeth. And honestly, when you've been training so long, I don't want to walk around feeling sluggish or tight or in pain or all the symptoms that are overwhelm or associated with not training enough, because you've been there long enough and that's your new reality, right? And that's definitely what I've just said there is a conversation I'll have with every one of my clients.
Yeah, I agree. It's it. I you might know the stat on this, but I believe it was. I think it takes a year and a half or 2 years for someone to exercise consistently to be considered a air quote lifelong exerciser. Which on one hand you're like, oh my God, that's such a long period of time. But on the other hand, if you think about what percentage of your life it is, it's not really that long. And in terms of investment, even if it's 2 years. If you could be guaranteed a high 90% that you would continue those healthy habits in some form the rest of your life, I'm like, man, that's a pretty solid investment.
And that's the reason why I'm convinced when people talk about online training and stuff like that, that post-COVID people were worried that all personal trainers are going to be replaced by
Yeah.
either online coaches or AIs. No, like for that exact reason that you just gave, Mike, having an appointment with someone in person 2 or 3 times a week for that amount of time is sometimes the key to lifelong change.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I've even had people who've inquired, and I just do online training. I do some in-person stuff here, but only just on an as-needed basis. If I know a trainer in their area and they are especially newer to exercise, like most of the time I'm like, hey, just go work with this person. Yes, it's going to be more expensive. Yes, it's going to be more time, but you're going to learn how to do the exercises better. They're going to watch you. They can give you immediate feedback. You have to have a little bit, yes, it is an inconvenience, but like you said, you're going to build in that habit of going somewhere and doing the thing. And even I think online, there is something about being accountable to a real human versus an AI. Like, I think even the accountability portion is very much underrated because if I only do online, people pay me a fair amount of money, but they also feel accountable to that person as another human who is really trying to help them. And that sort of bridge of, I don't want to disappoint this other human until I can get this to be more an automated process, I think is an effective bridge to get them to continue to do better things long term.
Totally. But then that goes back to what you said right in the beginning, which is I coach 17 people, where, if you're coaching 100 people online, there's no
Oh, I don't know
way
how
you
people
can
do
build that accountability.
that.
You need to be able to have that space
Yes.
to check in with them and properly. You have all these biofeedback forms and all the rest, but you need to check in with that person for it to really feel like you're being held accountable, I think.
Yeah. And last quick story on that. I have sometimes people that come over to my house will do like a 1 or 2 day or mentorship thing, and we'll have them do exercise in the garage and that kind of stuff and do some lectures. And a friend of mine was here once and she's asking me, she's when you're doing online coaching, like how often do you give people feedback? And I looked at her and I'm like, for you, yeah, maybe once every 4 to 5 days. And she's horrified. She's, what? That's so horrible. I'm like, because in your instance, you are doing it to be compliant to me. You want to show that you're doing it, but you're doing it to impress me that you can show up and do the thing. And I'm going to withhold feedback because I want to see autonomously how often you can continue to do the thing without any input from me. Because long term, when you're not working with me, that's what you're just going to be able to do. And I've known this person for many years, so I could get away saying that. And she's like, oh, okay, I get it. But if someone's brand new and they don't have any experience, you don't really know them that well, they may need more often more feedback and more encouragement and that type of thing too. So it's this gray area, but like you said, trying to get them long term, that it becomes more of an autonomous process then.
Although I would argue that I'm not sure that there's anything wrong with being coached for a lifetime. So what I
Oh,
mean
I
by
don't think
that
so
is,
either.
yes, because oftentimes it said you want to at some point ethically you want to get your client to be autonomous, and I totally agree with that. However, I've been training for 3 decades, and I still want to be coached because I think that helps me get out of my head, and so I'm much more picky with who I allow to coach me.
Oh yeah.
But I don't want to be writing my own programs. I don't want to be, I would much rather someone who I really trust and who knows their, excuse my language, their shit, to be coaching me, because that's that one time where I don't have to think about it. Just
Yeah.
go ahead and do.
And I would rephrase that I should say autonomous in the fact that they are going to do the work. So I would argue, like in your case, you're definitely going to do the work whether you have a coach or not. But I do agree that having a coach, as most people I coach are trainers themselves, gets you out of your head to not second guess it. Yes, you are still accountable. But I think at that level, it's more of, okay, I can be hyper focused on the things that I know I need to do, and I can make sure that I'm not getting in my own way by complicating it, or because everyone just doesn't want to do the things that are hard that might be the most effective for their goals. I still have a coach that helps me lift the inch dumbbell because I know I will do things that look like and I could convince myself might transfer, but might not. Where if he's like, okay, here's your top four things you need to work on, I can't really get around that. This item is number six. Is it really number one? He's like, no. Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right.
I love it. Yeah, for sure.
So how do you apply that to corporate athletes then? Do you, it sounds like you do a lot of stuff with everything from nutrition to sleep to training. I guess the two-part question, one, how do you figure out where to start? And then how do you organize that for them going forward? Because the mistake I made early on was I just way overwhelmed the crap out of people the first couple of weeks. 'Cause I'm like, oh my God, you have all these things to do. And I just let them have 13 items, which was a complete trash bin fire, which was totally my fault.
I think that it starts with a good conversation, and obviously and everyone will come in with different goals, but ultimately I think that a lot of the goals afterwards converge to a few. And in most cases, especially when we're talking about the type of corporate athletes, these guys are smart, right? And so and they could talk me out of a room on lots and lots of topics. So I think that the mistake that I used to make when I was younger was feeling like I had to come with all the answers. And now you're sitting across the table from the CFO or the CFO, a CEO or of a multinational company, or someone who successfully launched and sold multiple startups, these types of things, right? They're smart people. And so then I just sit down with them and I spend my time asking them questions. And they'll talk to me first about their goal, and I'll just keep digging deeper and deeper into that goal. But then also, it's okay, you obviously know a lot, but what can you implement? I'll be asking them what they can implement right now. What do you think that you could do to get closer to your goal? What do you feel is something that's realistic right now? And oftentimes, I'll be just guiding them towards the answers they already know, lifestyle wise, and then I'll just add in a bit of salt and pepper here and there. When it comes to the details of nutrition, for example, that might require a bit more explanation. But some of them know I need to get to bed earlier, right? I need to switch off sooner. I probably shouldn't be drinking as much alcohol when I'm out with clients. And these are all quick, easy wins because they know it and they will admit it to you. And the great thing is with corporate clients is if you allow them to feel like they've got some control, they're much more compliant. And so I start with that. And then over time, what happens is, and again, because they're highly educated and smart, they oftentimes come in an industry. I think it's less the case in the US, but especially in Europe, it's a young industry. And so they and it's not always as well protected. You can get people that become like personal trainers with a weekend course. And so they come in with a little bit of apprehension, or they don't trust you 100%. And that's where I don't want to spend my whole time justifying myself. I don't want to spend my whole time explaining stuff. So what I do is I build that trust by allowing them to guide the conversation, and I just ask them questions, and then afterwards I follow up with an email, say, hey, look, this is what we agreed. Let's start off by putting that into place. And so that's all the nutrition lifestyle aspects. And then over time, as they trust me more, then I'll be coming in more with the details, like the when it could make sense to take certain supplements, when it could make sense to even supplement with just more protein, when it could make sense to implement maybe a sauna or an evening walk, and then you can explain the rationale behind it, and they're open to it and they'll hear it. That's definitely one aspect. And then when it comes to the training, I think that from that perspective, it's evolved a lot over the years. One thing that I do, which I don't think a lot of people do, is I really take this cognitive aspect seriously. And so what I'll do is I will stress the body, and then I'll ask them in their rest sets to complete cognitive tasks. And what I found when doing things like that is I use and I get no money for plugging this or whatever, but I use Peak, for example, which is an application which helps with little games, and they're all different types of games. Some of them are memory games, some of them are logic, some of them are quick reflexes and stuff like that. And it scores them and it helps them. And again, you're speaking to people who are driven by that type of stuff. And so what happens is adding those things in, when some of these people, they don't like to lift, they don't want to do cardio, but you add that element in it, that competitive cognitive element into it, man, they light up, and you're able to show them over time an extra bit of this data set which translates to better performance for them in their daily life, where you're showing your added value. And when you can take that also, and because obviously our job is also about selling ourselves to a certain extent, when you can take that to the next company and say, yes, we improved visceral fat levels and blood pressure and all these types of things which help for health insurance policies and all these types of things. But on top of that, look at this. We've got symptomatically waking up feeling more energetic, not having a dip at lunchtime and all this. And then look at this. Then cognitively, memory went from at the age of 50 to 53, which most people don't think that they can really improve cognitively when they get to a slightly later stage in life. No, look, memory improved there, this improved there, and all the cognitive functions and showing that, I think, is really cool and of added value, of course. So
That's awesome. Have you, just for my own curiosity, have you played much with ketones in that area? There's some interesting data with supplemental ketones under cognitive function under higher levels of fatigue. I know Brandon Egan's done some of that. It's the data sets are a little bit mixed, but that's something I always find fascinating.
yeah, I've played with it. To say that I've implemented it over a big enough amount of people to really draw conclusions, I probably wouldn't be able to confirm. One that I have, which obviously I'm teaching no one anything new, is creating, right? So in periods of high stress, sleep deprivation periods, bumping that creatine up to levels closer to 20 grams, has huge impacts, and that I can show. Like, that is something that I can really show. Ketones, when I first started playing with them, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't sure of, and this is just my lack of knowledge at the time, is I wasn't sure of the impact of what I had to do nutritionally. So if I was giving them ketones, if they're then eating carbs, is that going to impact
Oh, sure, yeah.
these types of things? I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I've obviously looked into better use of fat as a source of fuel, but that's more my endurance background as a triathlete and working with long distance athletes and stuff. And there, ketones I've definitely used a lot of. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm biased because I do some work for Tecton ketone esters, but it's one of these areas I've just been fascinated by since I originally talked to Dom D'Agostino back, oh God, how many years ago now when they were first, Patrick Arnold was doing the first ketone esters for him for the military projects. The fact that you can take in an exogenous ketone and get high levels of blood ketones within a few minutes to me is fascinating. And for a long time, similar to you, I was like, ah. I don't know if it's a good idea in the face of carbohydrates, because for listeners in general, ketones would show up more during a starvation condition or during a ketogenic diet, which is very low carbohydrate. So I was very worried about having high levels of blood and then high levels of ketones, because that never really seems to happen at any other time. But there's been a couple studies, and the main first one was in Cell many years ago, and endurance athletes did high levels of, I think it was Kieran Clark's study. High levels of carbohydrates, high levels of delta G ketones showed that was fine. And there's been some further studies that have been replicated a couple times now showing that exogenous ketones may actually blunt blood glucose levels. So instead of being detrimental, they may actually be beneficial in certain cases.
And
And
so
so
they're
I've,
blunting blood glucose levels by increasing the glucose uptake, or?
we don't entirely know yet. I don't think there's been a tracer study done on it to see what's happening. But my limited understanding, which is just more of a guess, I think it's actually changing how the liver is putting out basically carbohydrates or glucose into the blood. I think it's probably breaking that to some degree. So you still have a rise in glucose levels, but it doesn't go up quite as high. So if you look at the curves of like area under the curve of blood glucose levels with and without ketones, with ketones, it tends to be a little bit lower.
So
And my
not in a fed state then.
in a fed state, yeah. So with a meal. So if you have, let's say, 80 grams of carbohydrates and we give you 10 or 20 grams of a ketone ester, and the other group you have, say, 80 grams of carbohydrates and no ketone ester, the group with the ketone ester, the blood levels over the next 2 to 3 hours will actually be lower in the group that had the ketones. So it appears to be modifying blood glucose levels, and I don't think it's modifying the absorption of the carbohydrates. I think it's actually stopping more production from the liver of putting out more carbohydrates into the bloodstream, is my guess. But
But
I don't know if we really know the
why would the
mechanism.
liver be putting more glucose out into the bloodstream if you're in a fed state?
I think it does, it drops off, but I think it changes some of the kinetics of that. And maybe it changes the kinetics of what's actually being used by the tissue. Yeah, I
Okay.
don't know. Like, if we've only had a couple mouse
Yeah.
studies that have looked at it, and I haven't seen a tracer study looking at any of the mechanisms
Interesting.
yet.
I wonder if you looked at insulin levels and whether that first phase insulin response is impacted by it then.
My
Because
guess
obviously
is that it
that's the one which
probably is.
postprandial, that's the
Yep.
one that obviously postprandial is going to, it seems to play the most effect on long-term blood glucose levels afterwards if you get a real good first phase insulin response.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My guess is I think it's probably more that first phase of insulin release, which is really harder to figure out from different models and that kind of stuff. But my guess is, yeah, I would agree. So it's on my little list of, do we have any idea what's going on there? Meh, I don't know. But yeah, it seems to be beneficial on that. And then under fatigue, it does seem, I found ketone esters seem to be beneficial when blood glucose use in the brain is maybe a little bit goofy, like higher levels of stress later in the day, that type of thing. And the variability I've noticed in response to it is like extremely individual. Like some people, like, eh, if I'm well rested and stuff, I don't notice a huge difference. But if my
Yeah.
stress level is high, my sleep's off a little bit, training's high, then I seem to notice a much bigger effect from them, which is
Yeah.
interesting.
And
Yeah.
do you recommend pairing it with something like carnitine, or does that not play a role?
You can. I don't know what your thoughts on carnitine is, but it carnitine in and of itself, like for oral carnitine, you need wicked high doses to get
Yeah.
anything that matters. Like 2, 3, 4 grams probably or higher.
Yeah, up to
There's a
five,
Greenhoff
six.
study where they did it with, I want to say, was it 80 or 100 grams of carbohydrates? And they did show that you could increase levels of carnitine by doing that. We don't know if those increased levels of carnitine matter much at all. I mean, you can go with
Just
like an
I'm just thinking
acetyl
about the
L-carnitine.
shuttling of fatty acids across the
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, it definitely seems to help. People use injectable L-carnitine, and it's anecdotal at this point, but pretty much 90% of the people I know who've done that have reported that it seems to make a pretty big difference. There's some other stuff with astaxanthin may potentially change the CPT1 enzyme. So the carnitine palmitate transferase 1, which then if you change that, you can get more fat into the mitochondria. Maybe I don't know. It just seems, I don't know what you've seen, but supplements in general to increase fat use, just other than things that amp up your nervous system, stimulants, outside of that, like I don't, it doesn't seem to be a lot that moves the needle.
Well, it's oftentimes it's the body's amazing at that, right? It's oftentimes it's enzymatic, isn't it? So it doesn't
Yep.
matter to what extent the levels are at, it's the enzymatic activity which is important. And it's just like, again, we can go off on loads of different topics, but it's just like the what was it again? Increasing levels of, oh, now I'm lost for words. The supplement which was supposed to be helping against anti-aging,
Oh,
B
like NMN or NR or
NMN,
that
that's
type of
right.
thing.
It's the same thing with the NMN and mind. It's you can supplement with as much as you want, but there's no way of knowing that at the moment, if you're especially supplementing with it orally, that you're actually changing any usage of it as when it comes to the electron transport chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry,
No.
that's another perfect example where people are just seeking to increase the ingredients, but forgetting that the body is tightly regulated and it's all about what is the body going to do with it? And sometimes it just won't use it. So
Yeah.
yeah.
That's been my bias. I tried NMN a little bit. I didn't notice a big difference. I didn't use it a ton. I may have done God, what, 2 to 4 grams of NR every day for 8 weeks. And I didn't notice, I couldn't find any difference. Like, I couldn't find resting heart rate, performance, HRV. Blood work was fine because I'm like, if it does participate in the energy pathway, but if it is increasing all this energy, show me the studies that it increases performance, right? Because
That's
in healthy
interesting.
people, it should, and it doesn't seem to. At least two studies show, one was like mixed and one was like, eh.
But it's crazy though, right? Because I remember I presented to the University Hospital of Leuven, which is quite a well-known hospital, on NAD plus a good 10 years ago. And you're showing all the studies that they did on rats, where they're getting all of this, and they're recovering their eyesight, and their curvature of their spine is
Oh,
improving.
those are
And it's
crazy animal studies.
It was nuts, but then give it orally to a human, and I think that tightly linked circuit of internally your body saying no, this is something that I will regulate whether you give me more of it or not. I'm curious if it's injected locally to the certain sites, whether that helps or not. But clearly, our body system is cleverer than us.
Yeah, and the IV studies on it are, I haven't looked for 4 months, but I can't find a single IV study in humans on it.
There you
I
go.
can find you anecdotal reports of people I know who said it was the best thing they've ever done, and I can show you reports of people who are like, I spent 2 grand and I don't feel any difference whatsoever.
Cool.
Yeah. Do you get a lot of questions on like supplements? And my brief work with some, even just athletes or even higher level corporate people, is that I think they're so inundated with, I don't want to use the word biohacking, but all the biohacking stuff and stuff that I think could be beneficial, but down in like the single digit percentage. And then you do a form and you're like, bro, you're sleeping 5.5 hours a night, drinking like 8 cups of coffee, and now you're having nicotine lozenges at 8 p.m. at night to work longer, and you can't sleep.
I get supplement questions a lot. I think in Europe it's a bit more taboo than it is in the UK or the US. People are less I oftentimes get the can't I get enough through my food type of
Oh,
question. But there definitely are questions, and I will. So I actually work with a company called Spoken,
oh, nice.
and the idea. Again, I never really wanted to get involved with a supplement company because first of all, what I always used to do before was I would take, I love working with blood work and stuff like that. And so I would take what I'm seeing symptomatically, I would take what I'm seeing aesthetically, performance-wise, and then I would adjust, right? And I would then go to a company like bulkpowders.co.uk. And that's a plug that I have nothing to do with, right? But I'll go there because what I would like is I could literally get in bulk, and this is actually recommended to me. Bulk was recommended to me by a guy that used to work for me that you know quite well, Mike Camille.
Tell him I said hello. He's great.
So I used to go to bulk for that. And so again, what was great there is I could say, okay, I need you to get 250 grams of citrulline malate, and I need you to get this much of caffeine anhydrous, and so and you would get it, and it's third party tested, and I love that. I really love that. What I found though is, because I'm super passionate about it, I can get people on board about buying these single ingredients and then putting it together and doing that. What I found, the more I work with the team, is first of all, it's not all their passion, and they can't speak therefore as in depth about it or as passionately about it as I can. And so then Spoken, I got involved with them because actually the CEO, a guy called Jordan Boxer, was at Designs for Sports and Designs for Health. And he said, listen, what we really want to do is we want to develop only a few products which we've been given like free rein to go to labs, test whatever you want as coaches. So we're going to put together a panel of coaches of what they think are smart guys. I'm not sure that I'm smart, but and they said, okay, test whatever you want, but we want to put together four or five things which are going to increase the likelihood that people are going to take this, but that are genuinely going to have an impact. So not fairy dusting and putting in a ton of ingredients just to be able to make the claims, but not having enough dosage, or choosing low quality, low bioavailable ingredients so that margins are higher and stuff like that. So just to do what you want. And with myself, I got involved a bit later, but you got people like David Lawrence, Dr. Jordan Shallow, Andy O'Brien, and a few other guys involved, and they just went and built a couple of products. And two of the ones that I really, really love, and that's, we're talking about energy, brings me back to this, right? But two of the ones that they built, one was Sleep Builder and one was Amino ATP. And Sleep Builder, I think, is really cool. Sleep Builder, what they've got in that Sleep Builder is they've got 300 milligrams of a tri blend of magnesium, which great, but it's the real bioavailable forms. You've got some orotate in there, bisglycinate in there. They've got a high dose of inositol for your serotonin and these types of things. They've got your theanine in there at a high, I think it's 200 or 300 milligrams of L-theanine. They've got a glycine, 3 grams of glycine in there for body temperature, for also just for subjective sleep quality. And then one of the ones which has been really interesting, and and I'm curious what your thoughts on this is then they add in 5 grams of glutamine. And so the glutamine, the thought process there is on an empty stomach, taking it before bed really helps to rebuild the gut lining so that you're not only just sleeping and getting well rested, but you're being rebuilt as well, helping with digestion. A lot of athletes over the season, through impact, through bad nutrition, through poor sleep, their gut health degrades. And so they added that in. And it's crazy because I would say that, and like I said, I would love to hear what you think about this, but I would say that 60 or 70% take it and they wake up on another planet. They're like, what the, just hit me. That's amazing. But then you've got like the what I would call like the GABA sensitive type clients who have tendency more for anxiety and so I think that glutamine, which obviously has pathways towards glutamate, can sometimes have a more negative impact on their sleep. And so I've seen that by taking it like at 4 p.m. instead of late at night has had a positive impact. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. I don't know if we've got good studies showing how far glutamine will convert. Obviously, the biochemistry of it makes perfect sense. Glutamine is something I used back in the day for a lot, and then I stopped using it for many years. And coincidentally enough, I actually just started adding it again. So we were using it for my wife has some digestive stuff we're working through, so that's one of the things we added. And so lately, I added 5 or 10 grams after training. And my thought being that maybe it'll help with the immune system, and maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but I do it after my longer, like 2, 2.5 hour sessions. We do know that, especially your background as an endurance athlete, that you can end up with gut permeability stuff, especially with long, long hours of intense endurance training. Usually that's many, many, many hours, and athletes who are highly stressed. But I thought, eh, it's not really going to be any negative. Maybe it'll help a little bit with recovery, maybe some gut stuff at that point, get me back to more of a parasympathetic state. And glutamine's cheap now. There's no real negative side effects. So I just started doing that a couple of weeks ago. Can't say if I noticed any difference or not, but doesn't seem to be any worse.
There was an interesting thing that Charles used to say back in the day, which was about the glutamine and glycogen as well post-training,
Yeah, and he
which
was
is
using like
also,
40 grams, I think, or something like that.
and saying how it's actually quite good at replenishing or helping with the replenishment of glycogen post-training. To be honest, I was, because of my endurance background, there was no substitute for your cyclic dextrins or
Oh,
your
yeah,
carbohydrates,
I
because for
totally
me it
agree
was
with
like
that.
that's for me was the cleanest source. And then, but then going to the next one is, and I'm curious about your thoughts on that. So they develop, and so you can see there that with the Sleep Builder supplement, they're trying to put together a host of ingredients which are higher quality ingredients and at the proper dosage, 3 grams of glycine, 5 grams of glutamine, 200 milligrams of L-theanine. I think it's I can't be sure, but I think it's so many grams of inositol, not milligrams, but actually grams.
Yeah, from what I looked at it before, it was pretty solid formula.
And so that was the idea, was here not taking separate ingredients, because I would love to have people take, that's what that was the case before, is I wanted people to be taking glycine and magnesium and stuff, so I'd be buying them separately. But the other one is this amino ATP, because in amino ATP you have your, obviously you have your essential amino acids in there. Adding in an ingredient that I've loved for quite a few years is tyrosine. Because of its cognitive and stress impact when it comes to training without the this the in my case without the sleep impact, because I'm quite sensitive to sleep. But the other one that they have in there is this ATP. And obviously my first question was, wait a second, ATP is something that your cell makes. How are you giving them? And the way my brain works is glucose creates glucose or fatty acids, right? But create ATP through your electron transport chain and all the rest, right? But the idea here is, you know how it's a patented form, and so what happens is it sits outside the cell. And you know how when you take creatine, right, it's stored as phosphocreatine, and so it helps you to recycle that ATP when it passes off its phosphate. Phosphocreatine can then give it the phosphate again, and it can recycle. This patented form of ATP sits outside the cell and can do the same thing. And so it can help you to recycle ATP. And I'll tell you what, again, I haven't delved really deep into the science of it, but anecdotally, when I've given it to people in the afternoon, not giving them caffeine and stuff like that, they're like, poof. They're like, it's an interesting one. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah, there's been some old stuff. I remember talking to Ralph Yeager about this, that ATP was originally, it was ribose was the main thing, like to be increasing the adenosine pool. And that had very mixed results. And then there is ATP as a supplement. And Ralph was saying that there was some blood vessel beneficial helps and maybe some dilation. Again, I'll have to look into it. It sounds interesting, but maybe the ATP is being broken down and then added to the adenosine pool, maybe, so that you, again, just like creatine, maybe you have that pathway running a little bit faster. But yeah, I have used L-tyrosine in the past. Usually it's gram amounts that you need, but that does seem to be beneficial with that too. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. That's super cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for all your time today. I really appreciate it. Where can people find out more about you? Tell us what you got going on for websites, social media, etc.
If you want to just look me up on Instagram myself, it's just Dan Hunter 85, showing my age. If you want to look up the company, it's just DH Transformation. Our website is just danhunter.be. If you want to, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer emails rather than DMs. I'm a bit old fashioned that way, so it's just dan@danhunter.pe. And then if anyone is interested, even on the spoken side, I'm more than happy to offer some type of discount if someone's interested in those. Like I said, I want to be clear, as I am involved with them, which is why that's the case. And so then again, just email me, dan@danhunter.be, and I can sort that out as well.
Awesome. And if we have people located in Europe, where tell us where your physical locations are.
So my physical, we have three gyms. So we have one in Tavern, which is the outskirts of Brussels. It's more of a residential area. It's my gym baby. It's where I've created my training mecca. So we've got like 500 square meters of just all the training stuff that I wanted to see. So all the way from your Eleiko Olympic lifting to your
Nice.
strongman track of 30 meters. I'm not sure what that is in yards, but, and then your, just everything that I could think of is in there. And then we've got two corporate locations. And so our two corporate locations are in the center of Brussels. One is one side of Brussels, and one is the other side of Brussels. They're in two corporate buildings. And yeah, there the idea is really, the owner of the buildings, post-COVID, they wanted us to create an environment which reattracted people back into the offices. So it was, can you create a community which is healthy, vibrant? And so there, yeah, we have DH trainers present there all the time. And yeah, and employees can come up to them, ask them anything, sleep questions, stress questions, breakfast questions, training questions. And we're really happy to be able to assist so many people on a daily basis like that.
Cool. That's awesome. I'd highly encourage everybody to check out all your wonderful stuff. And yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Great, my pleasure. And thanks for having me on, Mike. It's always great to talk to you.
Yeah, it was good. Thank you so much.
Cool. A bit more explanation. But some of them know I need to get to bed earlier, right? I need to switch off sooner. I probably shouldn't be drinking as much alcohol when I'm out with clients. And these are all quick, easy wins because they know it and they will admit it to you. And the great thing is with corporate clients is if you allow them to feel like they've got some control, they're much more compliant. And so I start with that. And then over time, what happens is, and again, because they're highly educated and smart, they oftentimes come in an industry. I think it's less the case in the US, but especially in Europe, is it's a young industry, and so they and it's not always as well protected. You can get people that become like personal trainers with a weekend course, and so they come in with a little bit of apprehension, or they don't trust you 100%. And that's where I don't want to spend my whole time justifying myself. I don't want to spend my whole time explaining stuff. So what I do is I build that trust by allowing them to guide the conversation, and I just ask them questions. And then afterwards I follow up with an email, say, hey, look, this is what we agreed. Let's start off by putting that into place. And so that's all the nutrition, lifestyle aspects. And then over time, as they trust me more, then I'll be coming in more with the details, like the when it could make sense to take certain supplements, when it could make sense to even supplement with just more protein, when it could make sense to implement maybe a sauna or an evening walk, and then you can explain the rationale behind it, and they're open to it and they'll hear it. That's definitely one aspect. And then when it comes to the training, I think that from that perspective, it's evolved a lot over the years. One thing that I do, which I don't think a lot of people do, is I really take this cognitive aspect seriously. And so what I'll do is I will stress the body, and then I'll ask them in their rest sets to complete cognitive tasks. And what I found when doing things like that is I use, and I get no money for plugging this or whatever, but I use Peak, for example, which is an application which helps with little games, and they're all different types of games. Some of them are memory games, some of them are logic, some of them are quick reflexes and stuff like that. And it scores them and it helps them. And again, you're speaking to people who are driven by that type of stuff. And so what happens is adding those things in, when some of these people, they don't like to lift, they don't want to do cardio, but you add that element in it, that competitive cognitive element into it, man, they light up, and you're able to show them over time an extra bit of this data set which translates to better performance for them in their daily life, where you're showing your added value. And when you can take that also, and because obviously our job is also about selling ourselves to a certain extent, when you can take that to the next company and say, yes, we improved visceral fat levels and blood pressure and all these types of things which help for health insurance policies and all these types of things. But on top of that, look at this. We've got symptomatically waking up feeling more energetic, not having a dip at lunchtime and all this. And then look at this. Then cognitively, memory went from at the age of 50 to 53, which most people don't think that they can really improve cognitively when they get to a slightly later stage in life. No, look, memory improved there. This improved there. And all the cognitive functions and showing that, I think, is really cool and of added value, of course. So
That's awesome. Have you, just for my own curiosity, have you played much with ketones in that area? There's some interesting data with supplemental ketones under cognitive function, under higher levels of fatigue. I know Brandon Egan's done some of that. It's The data sets are a little bit mixed, but that's something I always find fascinating.
Yeah, I've played with it. To say that I've implemented it over a big enough amount of people to really draw conclusions, I probably wouldn't be able to confirm. One that I have, which obviously I'm teaching no one anything new, is creating, right? So in periods of high stress, sleep deprivation periods, bumping that creatine up to levels closer to 20 grams
Yep.
has huge impacts, and that I can show. Like, that is something that I can really
Cool.
show. Ketones, when I first started playing with them, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't sure of, and this is just my lack of knowledge at the time, is I wasn't sure of the impact of what I had to do nutritionally. So if I was giving them ketones, if they're then eating carbs, is that going to impact
Oh, sure, yeah.
these types of things? I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I've obviously looked into better use of fat as a source of fuel, but that's more my endurance background as a triathlete and working with long distance athletes and stuff. And there, ketones I've definitely used a lot of. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm biased because I do some work for Tecton ketone esters, but it's one of these areas I've just been fascinated by since I originally talked to Dom D'Agostino back, oh God, how many years ago now, when they were first, Patrick Arnold was doing the first ketone esters for him for the military projects. The fact that you can take in an exogenous ketone and get high levels of blood ketones within a few minutes to me is fascinating. And for a long time, similar to you, I was like, I don't know if it's a good idea in the face of carbohydrates, because for listeners in general, ketones would show up more during a starvation condition or during a ketogenic diet, which is very low carbohydrate. So I was very worried about having high levels of blood and then high levels of ketones, because that never really seems to happen at any other time. But there's been a couple studies, and the main first one was in Cell many years ago, and endurance athletes did high levels of, I think it's Kieran Clark's study. High levels of carbohydrates, high levels of delta G ketones showed that was fine. And there's been some further studies that have been replicated a couple times now showing that exogenous ketones may actually blunt blood glucose levels. So instead of being detrimental, they may actually be beneficial in certain cases.
And
And
so
so
they're
I've used.
blunting blood glucose levels by increasing the glucose uptake, or?
We don't entirely know yet. I don't think there's been a tracer study done on it to see what's happening. But my limited understanding, which is just more of a guess, I think it's actually changing how the liver is putting out basically carbohydrates or glucose into the blood. I think it's probably breaking that to some degree. So you still have a rise in glucose levels, but it doesn't go up quite as high. So if you look at the curves of like area under the curve of blood glucose levels with and without ketones, with ketones, it tends to be a little bit lower.
So
And
not
my
in a fed state then.
in a fed state, yeah. So with a meal. So if you have, let's say, 80 grams of carbohydrates and we give you 10 or 20 grams of a ketone ester, and the other group you have, say, 80 grams of carbohydrates and no ketone ester, the group with the ketone ester, the blood levels over the next 2 to 3 hours will actually be lower in the group that had the ketones. So it appears to be modifying blood glucose levels, and I don't think it's modifying the absorption of the carbohydrates. I think it's actually stopping more production from the liver of putting out more carbohydrates into the bloodstream, is my guess. But
But
I don't know if we really know the
why would the
mechanism.
liver be putting more glucose out into the bloodstream if you're in a fed state?
I think it does, it drops off, but I think it changes some of the kinetics of that. And maybe it changes the kinetics of what's actually being used by the tissue. Yeah, I don't know. Like, if we've only had a couple mouse studies that have looked at it, and I haven't seen a tracer study looking at any of the mechanisms
Interesting.
yet.
I wonder if you looked at insulin levels and whether that first phase insulin response is impacted by it then.
My
Because
guess
obviously
is that it
that's the one which
probably
pushed
is.
prandial. That's the
Yep.
one that obviously postprandial is going to, it seems to play the most effect on long-term blood glucose levels afterwards if you get a real good first phase insulin response.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My guess is I think it's probably more that first phase of insulin release, which is really harder to figure out from different models and that kind of stuff. But my guess is, yeah, I would agree. So it's on my little list of, do we have any idea what's going on there? Meh, I don't know. But yeah, it seems to be beneficial on that. And then under fatigue, it does seem, I found ketone esters seem to be beneficial when blood glucose use in the brain is maybe a little bit goofy, like higher levels of stress later in the day, that type of thing. And the variability I've noticed in response to it is like extremely individual. Like some people, like, eh, if I'm well rested and stuff, I don't notice a huge difference. But if my
Yeah.
stress level is high, my sleep's off a little bit, training's high, then I seem to notice a much bigger effect from them, which is
Yeah.
interesting.
And
Yeah.
do you recommend pairing it with something like carnitine, or does that not play a role?
You can. I don't know what your thoughts on carnitine is, but it carnitine in and of itself, like for oral carnitine, you need wicked high doses to get anything that matters. Like 2, 3, 4 grams probably or higher.
Up to
There's a
five, six.
Greenhoff study where they did it with, I want to say, was it 80 or 100 grams of carbohydrates? And they did show that you could increase levels of carnitine by doing that. We don't know if those increased levels of carnitine matter much at all. I mean, you can go with
Just
like an
I'm just thinking about the
acetyl-L-carnitine.
shuttling of fatty acids across the
Yeah,
across.
yeah. Yeah, it definitely seems to help. People use injectable L-carnitine and it's anecdotal at this point, but pretty much 90% of the people I know who've done that have reported that it seems to make a pretty big difference. There's some other stuff with astaxanthin may potentially change the CPT1 enzyme, so the carnitine palmitate transferase 1, which then if you change that, you can get more fat into the mitochondria. Maybe I don't know. It just seems, I don't know what you've seen, but supplements in general to increase fat use, just other than things that amp up your nervous system, stimulants, outside of that, like I don't, it doesn't seem to be a lot that moves the needle.
Well, it's oftentimes it's the body's amazing at that, right? It's oftentimes it's enzymatic, isn't it? So it doesn't
Yep.
matter to what extent the levels are at, it's the enzymatic activity which is important. And it's just like, again, we can go off on loads of different topics, but it's just
Yeah,
like the what was it again? Increasing levels of now I'm lost for words. The supplement which was supposed to be helping against anti-aging,
Oh,
B
like NMN or NR or
NMN,
that
that's
type of
right. It's
thing.
the same thing with the NMN and mites. It's you can supplement with as much as you want, but there's no way of knowing that at the moment, if you're especially supplementing with it orally, that you're actually changing any usage of it as when it comes to the electron transport chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
No.
That's another perfect example where people are just seeking to increase the ingredients, but forgetting that the body is tightly regulated and it's all about what is the body going to do with it? And sometimes it just won't use it. So
Yeah. That's been my bias. I tried NMN a little bit. I didn't notice a big difference. I didn't use it a ton. I may have done, God, what, 2 to 4 grams of NR every day for 8 weeks. And I didn't notice, I couldn't find any difference. Like, I couldn't find resting heart rate, performance, HRV. Blood work was fine. Because I'm like, if it does participate in the energy pathway, but if it is increasing all this energy, show me the studies that it increases performance, right? Because
That's
in
it,
healthy
interesting.
people, it should. And it doesn't seem to. At least 2 studies show one was like mixed and one was like eh.
But it's crazy though, right? Because I remember I presented to the University Hospital of Leuven, which is quite a well-known hospital, on NAD plus a good 10 years ago. And you're showing all the studies that they did on rats, where they're getting all of this, and they're recovering their eyesight, and their curvature of their spine is
Oh,
improving.
those are
And
crazy animal studies.
it was nuts. But then give it orally to a human, and I think that that tightly linked circuit of internally your body saying, no, this is something that I will regulate, whether you give me more of it or not. I'm curious if it's injected locally to the certain sites, whether that helps or not. But clearly our body system is cleverer than us.
Yeah, and the IV studies on it are, I haven't looked for 4 months, but I can't find a single IV study in
Yeah.
humans on it.
There you
I
go.
can find you anecdotal reports of people I know who said it was the best thing they've ever done, and I can show you reports of people who are like, I spent 2 grand and I don't feel any difference whatsoever.
Cool.
Do you get a lot of questions on like supplements? And my brief work with some, even just athletes or even higher level corporate people, is that I think they're so inundated with, I don't want to use the word biohacking, but all the biohacking stuff and stuff that I think could be beneficial, but down in like the single digit percentage. And then you do a form and you're like, bro, you're sleeping 5.5 hours a night, drinking like 8 cups of coffee, and now you're having nicotine lozenges at 8 p.m. at night to work longer, and you can't sleep.
I get supplement questions a lot. I think in Europe it's a bit more taboo than it is in the UK or the US. People are less I oftentimes get the can I get enough through my food type of
Oh,
thing.
yeah.
But there indefinitely are questions. And I will. So I actually work with a company called Spoken,
Oh, nice.
and the idea, again, I never really wanted to get involved with a supplement company because I first of all, what I always used to do before was I would take. I love working with blood work and stuff like that, and so I would take what I'm seeing symptomatically. I would take what I'm seeing aesthetically, performance-wise, and then I would adjust, right? And I would then go to a company like bulkpowders.co.uk, and that's a plug that I have nothing to do with, right? But I'll go there because what I'd like is I could literally get in bulk, and this is actually recommended to me. Bulk was recommended to me by a guy that used to work for me that you know quite well, Mike Camille.
Tell him I said hello. He's great.
So I used to go to bulk for that, and so again, what was great there is I could say, okay, I need you to get 250 grams of citrulline malate, and I need you to get this much of caffeine anhydrous, and so and you would get it, and it's third party tested, and I love that. I really love that. What I found though is, because I'm super passionate about it, I can get people on board about buying these single ingredients and then putting it together and doing that. What I found the more I work with the team is, first of all, it's not all their passion, and they can't speak therefore as in depth about it or as passionately about it as I can. And so then Spoken, I got involved with them because actually the CEO, a guy called Jordan Boxer, was at Designs for Sports and Designs for Health. And he said, listen, what we really want to do is we want to develop only a few products which we've been given like free rein to go to labs, test whatever you want as coaches. So we're going to put together a panel of coaches of what they think are smart guys. I'm not sure that I'm smart, but and they said, okay, test whatever you want, but we want to put together four or five things which are going to increase the likelihood that people are going to take this, but that are genuinely going to have an impact. So not fairy dusting and putting in a ton of ingredients just to be able to make the claims, but not having enough dosage, or choosing low quality, low bioavailable ingredients so that margins are higher and stuff like that. So just said, do what you want. And with myself, I got involved a bit later, but you got people like David Lawrence, Dr. Jordan Shallow, Andy O'Brien, and a few other guys involved. And they just went and they built a couple of products. And two of the ones that I really, really love, and that's, we're talking about energy, brings me back to this, right? But two of the ones that they built, one was Sleep Builder and one was Amino ATP. And Sleep Builder, I think, is really cool. Sleep Builder, what they've got in that Sleep Builder is they've got 300 milligrams of like a tri blend of magnesium, which great, but it's the real bioavailable form. So you've got some orotate in there, bisglycinate in there. They've got a high dose of inositol for your serotonin, these types of things. They've got your theanine in there at a high, I think it's 200 or 300 milligrams of L-theanine. They've got a glycine, 3 grams of glycine in there for body temperature, for also just for subjective sleep quality. And then one of the ones which has been really interesting, and and I'm curious what your thoughts on this is then they add in 5 grams of glutamine. And so the glutamine, the thought process there is on an empty stomach, taking it before bed really helps to rebuild the gut lining so that you're not only just sleeping and getting well rested, but you're being rebuilt as well, helping with the digestion. A lot of athletes over the season, through impact, through bad nutrition, through poor sleep, their gut health degrades. And so they added that in. And it's crazy because I would say that, and like I said, I would love to hear what you think about this, but I would say that 60 or 70% take it and they wake up on another planet. They're like, what the, just hit me, that's amazing. But then you've got like the, what I would call like the GABA sensitive type clients who have tendency more for anxiety and for, and so I think that glutamine, which obviously has pathways towards glutamate, can sometimes have a more negative impact on their sleep. And so I've seen that by taking it like at 4 p.m. instead of late at night has had a positive impact. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. I don't know if we've got good studies showing how far glutamine will convert. Obviously, the biochemistry of it makes perfect sense. Glutamine is something I used back in the day for a lot, and then I stopped using it for many years. And coincidentally enough, I actually just started adding it again. So we were using it for my wife has some digestive stuff we're working through, so that's one of the things we added. And so lately, I added 5 or 10 grams after training. And my thought being that maybe it'll help with the immune system, and maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but I do it after my longer, like 2, 2.5 hour sessions. We do know that, especially your background as an endurance athlete, that you can end up with gut permeability stuff, especially with long, long hours of intense endurance training. Usually that's many, many, many hours, and athletes who are highly stressed. But I thought, eh, it's not really going to be any negative. Maybe it'll help a little bit with recovery and maybe some gut stuff at that point, get me back to more of a parasympathetic state. And glutamine's cheap now. There's no real negative side effects. So I just started doing that a couple of weeks ago. Can't say if I noticed any difference or not, but doesn't seem to be any worse.
There was an interesting thing that Charles used to say back in the day, which was about the glutamine and glycogen as well post-training,
And he
which
was
is
using like
also,
40 grams, I think, or something like that.
and saying how it's actually quite good at replenishing or helping with the replenishment of glycogen post-training. To be honest, I was, because of my endurance background, there was no substitute for your cyclic dextrins or
Oh,
your
yeah,
carbohydrates,
I
because for me
totally
it
agree
was
with
like,
that.
that's for me was the cleanest source. And then, but then going to the next one is, and I'm curious about your thoughts on that. So they develop, and so you can see there that with the Sleep Builder supplement, they're trying to put together a host of ingredients which are higher quality ingredients and at the proper dosage, 3 grams of glycine, 5 grams of glutamine, 200 milligrams of L-theanine. I think it's, I can't be sure, but I think it's so many grams of inositol, not milligrams, but actually grams.
Yeah, from what I looked at it before, it was pretty solid formula.
And so that was the idea, was here not taking separate ingredients, because I would love to have people take, that's what that was the case before, is I wanted people to be taking glycine and magnesium and stuff, so I'd be buying them separately. But the other one is this amino ATP, because in amino ATP you have your, obviously you have your essential amino acids in there. Adding in an ingredient that I've loved for quite a few years is tyrosine, because of its cognitive and stress impact when it comes to training without the this the in my case without the sleep impact, because I'm quite sensitive to sleep. But the other one that they have in there is this ATP. And obviously my first question was, wait a second, ATP is something that your cell makes. How are you giving them? And the way my brain works is glucose creates glucose or fatty acids, right? But create ATP through your electron transport chain and all the rest, right? But the idea here is, you know how it's a patented form. And so what happens is it sits outside the cell. And you know how when you take creatine, right, it's stored as phosphocreatine. And so it helps you to recycle that ATP when it passes off its phosphate. Phosphocreatine can then give it the phosphate again and it can recycle. This patented form of ATP sits outside the cell and can do the same thing. And so it can help you to recycle ATP. And I'll tell you what, again, I haven't delved really deep into the science of it, but anecdotally, when I've given it to people in the afternoon, not giving them caffeine and stuff like that, they're like, off. They're like, it's an interesting one. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah, there's been some old stuff. I remember talking to Ralph Yeager about this, that ATP was originally, it was ribose was the main thing, like to be increasing the adenosine pool. And that had very mixed results. And then there is ATP as a supplement. And Ralph was saying that there was some blood vessel beneficial helps and maybe some dilation. Again, I'll have to look into it. It sounds interesting, but maybe the ATP is being broken down and then added to the adenosine pool, maybe, so that you, again, just like creatine, maybe you have that pathway running a little bit faster. But yeah, I have used L-tyrosine in the past. Usually it's gram amounts that you need, but that does seem to be beneficial with that too. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. That's super cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for all your time today. I really appreciate it. Where can people find out more about you? Tell us what you got going on for websites, social media, etc.
If you want to just look me up on Instagram myself, it's just Dan Hunter 85, showing my age. If you want to look up the company, it's just DH Transformation. Our website is just danhunter.be. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer emails rather than DMs. I'm a bit old fashioned that way, so it's just Dan at Dan Hunter. And then if anyone is interested even on the spoken side, I'm more than happy to offer some type of discount if someone's interested in those. Like I said, I want to be clear, as I am involved with them, which is why
Sure.
well, that's the case. And so then again, just email me, Dan at danhunter.be, and I can sort that out as well.
Awesome. And if we have people located in Europe, where tell us where your physical locations are.
Yeah, so my physical, we have three gyms. So we have one in Tavern, which is the outskirts of Brussels. It's more of a residential area. It's my gym baby. It's where I've created my training mecca. So we've got like 500 square meters of just all the training stuff that I wanted to see. So all the way from your Eleiko Olympic lifting to your
Nice.
strongman track of 30 meters. I'm not sure what that is in yards, but and then you're just everything that I could think of is in there. And then we've got two corporate locations. And so our two corporate locations are in the center of Brussels. One is one side of Brussels, one is the other side of Brussels. They're in two corporate buildings. And yeah, there the idea is really the owner of the buildings, post-COVID, they wanted us to create an environment which reattracted people back into the offices. So it was, can you create a community which is healthy, vibrant? And so there, yeah, we have DH trainers present there all the time. And yeah, and employees can come up to them, ask them anything, sleep questions, stress questions, breakfast questions, training questions. And we're really happy to be able to assist so many people on a daily basis like that.
Cool. That's awesome. I'd highly encourage everybody to check out all your wonderful stuff. And yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Great, my pleasure. And thanks for having me on, Mike. It's always great to talk to you.
Yeah, it was good. Thank you so much.
Cool.
I dropped my gum. Hey, lady, would you toss my gum up? You could have taken it out of the wig first.
This podcast is for informational purposes only. The podcast is not intended as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. You should not use the information on the podcast for diagnosing or treating a health problem or disease or prescribing any medication or other treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider before taking any medication or nutritional supplement, and with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this or any other podcast. Reliance on the podcast is solely at your own risk. Information provided on the podcast does not create a doctor-patient relationship between you and any of the health professionals affiliated with our podcast. Information and statements regarding dietary supplements are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to therein. If you think you have a medical problem, consult a licensed physician.